Welcome to MetaStrategy's Forum on World-Class IT. I'm Peter High, and I'm pleased to welcome Vivek Kundra to the broadcast. Vivek is the Executive Vice President of Emerging Markets at Salesforce.com. In that role, Vivek focuses on 8 core markets and is working with the public and private sector alike to implement Salesforce.com solutions. Prior to joining Salesforce.com, Vivek served as the first United States Chief Information Officer, where he was credited with adopting game-changing cloud computing technologies, strengthening the cybersecurity posture of the nation, and launching an open government movement. Before his time as U.S. CIO, Vivek served as the Chief Technology Officer for the District of Columbia and as the Assistant Secretary of Commerce and Technology for the Commonwealth of Virginia. The World Economic Forum selected Vivek as a 2011 Young Global Leader, representing a group of exceptional young leaders who share a commitment to shaping the global future. He's also a member of the Council on Foreign Relations. Vivek holds an MS in Management Information Systems from the University of Maryland and is a graduate of the University of Virginia's Sorenson Institute of Political Leadership. I recently caught up with Vivek in Washington, D.C., and our conversation covered World-Class IT Principle 2, Infrastructure, as we spoke about the power of cloud computing, Principle 4, IT and Business Partnerships, as Vivek discussed his current role related to new customers for Salesforce.com, among a variety of other topics. The Forum on World-Class IT is brought to you by Red Hat, the world's leading open source solutions provider. Learn more at redhat.com. Vivek Kundra, I wonder if you could talk a bit about your current role. You are the Executive Vice President of Emerging Markets at Salesforce. Can you tell us a bit about that role and where your attention is focused for the foreseeable future?
So the focus is actually to help transform business and government to be customer-focused. Mark Benioff has talked about transforming companies and organizations in the social era to connect with your partners, with your customers, and with your product in a whole new way. And I'm very, very focused on making sure that in our top 8 countries and across the public sector, that organizations are transforming themselves to become either citizen organizations or customer companies.
And can you talk a bit about some of the methods you're using to do so? How does one do that?
Sure. A perfect example is how the Obama campaign actually leveraged technology, more specifically even Salesforce technology, to reach out and connect with millions of people around the country in ways that were structurally impossible in the past. So they were able to, using the Salesforce Service Cloud, tap into people who are calling into the campaign or reaching out via social networks or online, and could literally pinpoint if somebody cared about a particular public policy issue, such as education in Ohio, or somebody was very, very interested in terms of what was going on around healthcare in the state of Colorado, and having the ability to actually drive insight out of those interactions so that they could deploy surrogates appropriately across the country to make sure that best stories as they're coming in through these channels that they're able to tap into. And if you think about whether it was budget at the field level, intelligently deciding how money was being spent across the country, using applications, mining credible amounts of data to make better decisions, allowed them to connect with their citizens in ways that were not possible in the past.
Very interesting vignette. An interesting way to leverage technology better in an area that has been wanting of that perhaps in years past.
And if you think about the Obama campaign, right, it's literally in a matter of a year, you know, you basically are setting up a Fortune 100 company and dissolving it.
Exactly.
So it's what's exciting about that is also leveraging cloud platforms like Salesforce.com and the ability to actually fire up on demand a lot of what they needed in terms of IT capacity allowed them to effectively win an election.
Yeah, it's fascinating that you put it that way, that they're in essence setting up a Fortune 100 company and then dissolving it. Given the difference in way that an organization like that is operating and other countries that you might engage with are operating, where there's a finite period of time in which the campaign, I use campaign generically there, is going to be relevant and appropriate with an end point in mind, how, from an IT strategy perspective, for instance, does that sort of a campaign play out relative to a typical corporate campaign of a comparable nature in terms of developing IT strategy in that sort of a setting?
So I just came back from Japan this past week, and what's interesting is whether you're in Japan or the UK, the US, Australia, Canada, what we're seeing across the board is that corporations and governments around the world are actually looking at technology and realizing that the old era, you know, in the last 30 years, where a lot of investments were made in the back office on heavy industrial strength infrastructure can no longer yield the dividends that they expect as they need to transform their front office to be much more focused on their customers. And you need to be able to be agile. You need to be able to deploy technology not in years, but in weeks and months. And you need to be able to move from a culture of asset ownership to service provisioning to give you that agility, to give you that edge as you're competing, whether it's to provide excellent customer service or you're competing in terms of market share.
I like that. Very, very good response. You mentioned earlier that, obviously, again, you were focused on the emerging markets. How has the organization gone about the process of prioritizing emerging markets? Obviously, there's a wide array of countries that might be included under that rubric. How do you prioritize some forward and others back?
So we as a company have actually prioritized 8 countries that focused on. So countries such as, you know, the United States to Canada, UK, Japan, Australia, France, Germany, and India. Those are the countries that we're focused on.
And so from an emerging markets perspective, it's more emerging from Salesforce's perspective as opposed to global emerging markets.
Exactly.
Understood. And as you think about, obviously, some of those markets, say the U.S., for instance, is one in which the organization already has enviable penetration, whereas others on that list, I'm guessing, are much earlier in terms of Salesforce's impact. If it's possible to put a percentage to it, even a rough percentage, how much of what has worked in a place like the U.S. translates into these markets, and what kinds of things do not? Where is it necessary to appreciate and understand the nuance versus those aspects where you have found the needs and demands to be common?
I think across the board, you know, and if you look at Salesforce, it's a customer company. What we're seeing is that everybody is obsessed, as they should be, with how they fundamentally re-engineer the customer experience. Whether that's, again, you know, conversations you're having at capitals around the world or boardrooms around the world. And what's consistent here is realizing that, you know, with Twitter and Facebook and LinkedIn, all these social networks, no longer do the companies own their own brands, but it's the consumers and the customers that end up owning the brands, whether it's a company or a government. And so across the board, what we're seeing is what Salesforce is doing actually applies, whether you're running a $1 billion campaign for the presidency or you're a company like General Electric, a multinational corporation that operates across the world. Companies and governments are interested in terms of how they're able to connect with their customers.
How sophisticated is the buyer these days as they think about an offering like yours and think about how they might leverage it? Do you find that the average consumer is becoming more educated as to the potential value?
Absolutely. You know, what we're seeing now is the nexus between not just the CIO, but, you know, when you're talking about connected customers, you know, the marketing really cares. Because the chief marketing officer now wants to, you know, answer questions such as, do you listen to every customer? Do you engage customers on every channel? from Facebook to Twitter to the traditional channels like television and phone. And so that's where the nexus between the chief marketing officer and the CIO is really important. And then, you know, as you transform into a customer company, the other thing that's been really, really important here is a collaboration between the CIO and HR in terms of how our employees connecting with each other to be able to provide better service to their customers or partners. And so you look at the entire partner ecosystem in terms of how do you create, whether it's communities or specific partners, and then lastly, product. So the engineering on the business side and the CIO is also connected in terms of, you know, you look at where we're headed with IPv6 and IP addresses being assigned to virtually everything from your thermostat at home with companies like Nest, you know, to what you're seeing happening in terms of intelligent appliances, or if you look at what's going on with the Nike Fuel Band, across the board, what we're seeing is products are being connected in ways they weren't before, to the point where even scales are becoming social, where you can share your weight and broadcast it and, you know, use gaming to make sort of fitness more exciting.
I like that example a lot. You know, obviously, Vivek, you're a former CIO, and now you have a chance to meet with a lot of sitting CIOs as part of your current role. And you've talked about the need for the CIO to be a better partner, to seek out those internal partnerships, where at that nexus point between where IT and some sort of business, other business value can be drawn out. You've talked about the relationship with the CMO and the relationship with the head of HR. There's been a lot written of late about the CIO and IT generally ceding some kind of authority and control for everything from budget to plans to executives like the CMO, for instance, as the prominence of that role continues. Where do you sit from this perspective? How do you see the role of the CIO evolving versus something like the CMO and in terms of the relative power of those two positions?
I think at the end of the day, if you look at the role of the CIO, it's not going to be what it has been in the last three decades, which has been very much around buying servers and buying databases and buying hardware and building an infrastructure. And that was good enough in the past. Now, as we move forward, you're seeing this Darwinian pressure come from, you know, the customers who are actually able to connect and self-organize using technology from mobile to social. And most CEOs now realize the power of technology and what a game changer it is. And when they don't, you know, they become extinct. So you look at Amazon versus Borders or Blockbuster versus Netflix. History, recent history is riddled with companies that have ignored the power of technology at their own peril. That dictates that CIOs now cannot be just about racking and stacking servers, but it's much more about how do you actually transform the business? How do you actually use technology to break through into markets that didn't exist before? Or how to use technology to actually fundamentally rethink, you know, how your customers are buying from you, how your customers are being serviced, and how do you make sure that you're relevant there. So therefore, you know, when you look at a lot of the traditional CIOs, unfortunately, they're living in an era of lost IT, right? Or they become graveyard CIOs because most customers don't care, and most citizens don't care when they're dealing with their government, whether you have one data center or 2,000 data centers. What they care about is if they have to wait in line, hold on the phone, or submit a three-part paper form rather than the same experience that they're used to in their everyday life when they're dealing with a consumer web.
That's interesting. And it strikes me, Vivek, that a lot of what you're kind of in the thick of these days, like cloud computing and software as a service, you know, these are some of the fundamental game changers that are pushing CIOs. Most would think positively, some might view it negatively if they're too used to the old world, but from a place where they need to think about racking and stacking servers and thinking about hardware refresh and all these sorts of things, as opposed to thinking about what value can truly be drawn through IT. Can you speak a bit about the evolution of cloud computing and everything as a service as one of those points that are operating like a slingshot, propelling at least a certain cast of CIOs forward in terms of the value they can deliver to their organizations?
Sure. So I think of it very much like Maslow's pyramid of hierarchies, where, at the bottom of the pyramid, you have food, clothing, and shelter, and at the top of the pyramid is self-actualization. And I think for the last three decades, most CIOs have actually focused their energy at the bottom of the pyramid in terms of spend. And now, the reason I believe that there's this revolution in terms of customers is because the front office has to be fundamentally re-engineered, and CIOs must move up the stack in terms of how they're rethinking, whether it's a corporation or government, in terms of providing services or products. And that, to me, is what's really, really exciting about a customer company, is the ability to actually look at the front office and say, well, what are we doing to either streamline the process with which our customers engage with us or how we sell our product, but also how do we actually create new markets using technology? We live in an era where everything is being reinvented. From the old Honeywell thermostat, you see a company called Nest that's created, an IP-enabled thermostat, which helps you benchmark your temperature in your home against the neighborhood and across the country, to a company like Uber that's fundamentally reinventing the taxi cab industry for transportation. To companies, like Nike with healthcare in terms of getting feedback loops to the fuel band. And in the same way, if CIOs are not relevant or not having those conversations with CEOs and CMOs and HR, they're focused in the wrong area.
That makes very good sense. I wanted to also just briefly ask you about, you obviously were famously the first ever CIO of the federal government here in the United States. As you undertook that set of activities, how on earth did you get your mind and arms around priorities? Given the many things that one could focus on, how did you establish priorities in that sort of a scenario?
My journey in public service fortunately started at the local level. So I started in Arlington County. I had worked in the state of Virginia, and I had worked in the city of Washington, D.C. before I went to the White House. And so those experiences shaped my philosophy and my view, which is that you put the citizen at the heart of all government operations. And so when I joined, the president had a very clear sense of the not just lowering the cost of government operations and cracking down on wasteful spending, but also making sure that the United States be competitive in the global economy in terms of how we were using technology for government operations, and also simplifying access to government services. So it was very clear to me from day one, we had to simplify access to government services, we had to crack down on wasteful spending, and I was responsible for managing $80 billion in IT spending, and frankly, a lot of the technology spend in the public sector ends up being wasteful, because it's being spent in the context of what was happening in the last three decades. And I also recognize that what we needed to do as public servants is to make sure that we were creating a more open, transparent, and participatory democracy. So very quickly, I focused on four pillars and executed against them, because as you said, it's very easy to lose focus when you're dealing at such a large scale.
Exactly. Makes sense. One quick last question for you, Vivek. We've spoken about a lot of hot trends in IT, including social and mobile, cloud, data analytics. Are there other trends that particularly excite you as you look forward?
Yeah, I think the other thing that's really, really exciting, when you look at mobile, social, cloud, is also algorithms and big data. as you look at mobile devices across the planet with 7 billion people and, you know, close to 5 billion mobile devices, what's really exciting is every person has the potential to basically instrument the planet. Where from Chevy Chase, Maryland, where you are, to Shanghai, to Delhi, to London, to Tokyo, to New York and Washington, you could literally look at the grievances that people are sharing, the aspirations and the dreams that they're sharing, and slice and dice and cube a lot of that data to provide better service. And also, when you think about the future of whether it's governance or transportation, you know, what's really exciting, even with the Google Glasses that are out there, if you begin to see an intelligent transportation system, you begin to see a smart grid, you begin to actually see, you know, personalized services and products and medicine and even algorithmic regulations as you can adjust to what's happening on a real-time basis with big data.
That's very exciting and a really great, another great vignette, Vivek. I appreciate you sharing that. Well, thank you so much for taking this time. This has really been a great conversation.
Thank you.
The Forum on World Class IT would like to thank Red Hat, the world's leading provider of open source solutions, for being our corporate sponsor. Red Hat's business is built on the power of community-driven innovation, and it's this approach that enables customers to meet the demands of today's enterprise and prepare for tomorrow's opportunities. Connect to an ecosystem of innovation and visit redhat.com today to learn more. Listen to a podcast in a series we call MetaStrategy's Forum on World Class IT. If you like what you've heard, please consider reading my book, World Class IT, Why Businesses Succeed When IT Triumphs, published by Josie Bass, a division of Wiley Press, in December of 2009. Both the book and the Forum on World Class IT offer stories from a wide range of top IT leaders relating to MetaStrategy's five principles of world class IT. The five principles are as follows. Principle one is people, and it's really the foundational principle. Without the right people doing the right jobs at the right time, it'll be nearly impossible to achieve excellent performance. The second principle is infrastructure. We like to say that this is the principle that separates proactive organizations from reactive ones. If infrastructure is not reliably performing its tasks, the IT organization will become stuck in reactive mode, consistently fighting fires. If systems and hardware and networks and so on work reliably, then a larger portion of the organization can think about the future. The third principle is project and portfolio management. This is the engine through which new capabilities can be brought to bear on behalf of the company. It is important to ensure that projects are delivered on time, on budget, and on target, and that the portfolio collectively supports the objectives of the business. The fourth principle is IT and business partnerships. It's important that, first and foremost, the different parts of IT, from business analysis to development and QA, through to support and all other aspects of IT, communicate effectively and efficiently. It's equally important, then, that IT develop a partnering relationship with the business that it is a part of. If the three prior principles are done well, then IT should earn a place at the strategy setting table, driving different parts of the business strategy. The fifth and last principle is external partnerships. Outsourcing is becoming a crucial weapon that organizations are employing, and managing these relationships to ensure that value is achieved is critical. In the fourth principle, the organization has learned and contributed to the discussion about what is strategic and what is not. Once that's clear, then it will be easier to determine which aspects of IT might be better managed by external partners or vendors. For more information on these five principles and the sub-principles that are associated with each, please visit our website at www.metastrategy.com, and please share your thoughts and comments by contacting us at feedback@metastrategy.com. Our editors are Chris Davis and Calhan Kuhl, and our theme music was written by David Arman. I'm Peter High. Thanks for listening.